Okay, House Judiciary's Order 125. Record, we have Representative Roper, James, Green, Murkowski, myself. We have a quorum. And we'll start off with sequential order with House Bill Senate Bill 220. And I see we have Senator from the Administration.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, or I mean afternoon. My name is David Koivunen. I'm the Assistant Commissioner over at the Department of Administration. First, I should let you know that I am a LKT here for the LLC LLP bill, and I say LKT being limited knowledge testifier. Pinch hitting for some folks who are out doing some training on procurement. SB 220 clarifies the Alaska Bidder and Disability Preferences sections of the State Procurement Code regarding limited liability partnerships and limited liability corporations. Our procurement code was written in 1987. The LLCs and LLPs were not established in statute until the mid-1990s. We need to amend the procurement code to recognize limited liability partnerships and limited liability corporations, and that's simply what this bill does. For your information, the original bill was amended over on the Senate Finance. It was basically a kind of an error in the original drafting of the bill. The changes that were made were on page 2, line 6, and also line, let's see, line 23. The original bill called the reference managing directors. The proper term should have been managing members. That was the only amendment that was done over on the Senate side. So very, very briefly again, this bill just recognizes limited liability corporations and limited liability partnerships to allow bona fide Alaska businesses to receive the Alaska bidder preferences.
Representative James.
Well, I have a concern with this. If you read the three that's entered in here, first of all, you have a proprietorship owned by a person with a disability. You have a partnership in which if each of the partners is a person with a disability. And number four, corporation that is wholly owned by individuals and each of the individuals is a person with disability. And then you put in limited liability company if each of the managing members is a person with a disability. So you're broadening the opportunity for people who do not have a disability from being the people who might benefit from the activities of this limited liability company, in my understanding of that language. And I'm not sure that that's what we've ever intended with this piece of legislation. In the first place, originally it was only those people with sole proprietorship, so there would be no way to mess them up and give some benefit to somebody who's not disabled by this special preference. And now it appears that the language in this does that. Now, if somebody can tell me that it doesn't do that.
Representative James, through the chair, like I said, I'm kind of an unarmed person here, but I do have a copy of a letter that was written to Senator Torgerson. Let's see, it says, during the Senate Finance hearings on 220, you raised a question regarding the requirement for all managing directors or members of limited liability corporations and limited liability partnerships to be residents. I guess that's it applies to residency. So your question is, again, what?
Well, my question is that the limited liability company, they may have other members besides managing members. And those other members are not and are going to benefit by the financial activities of this company, and they may not be disabled. And we have been, during this whole issue of changing it from a sole proprietorship, which means the person would be disabled, and no one else is going to benefit from him or her taking those preferences. The preference is going to directly relate to that disabled person. We added in partnership, if each of the partners are disabled, and added in corporation, which is wholly owned by individuals, and each of the individuals is a person with disability, because that was my bill. That's why I know about this. And then now we're going to add in limited liability companies when only the managing members have to be disabled, and that doesn't mention anything about other members. And so it seems like there might be other members out there who would be benefiting from us giving these disabled people special preferences.
Chris Murkowski.
Well, and I heard you just ask for Title 10. I think we need to find out in the statutes how we are defining the members to an LLC.
We just passed that bill this year, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Yes.
But I mean, if we are defining those who are members of an LLC as all being managing members, it's not a problem here.
If that's the case,
Representative James may be correct that you have managing members and you have non-managing members. My understanding of the statute is that it just describes everybody as a member. I'm a member of an LLC, and there are certain of the members in that LLC that are less active than others. I don't think that we designate ourselves one way or another as managing or non-managing, but I want to see you declare whether or not it is somehow defined or addressed in the statutes. Because it may be that what we would want to do is just say all members are residents of the states or all members are persons with disabilities.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Rubber.
I understand that the points made by Representative James and Murkowski, because that is a policy call. Mm-hmm. You know, do we want to expand it? Clearly, membership of a LLC or LLP could be such that they would have non-disabled membership as investments, you know, the silent partner investors, et cetera, et cetera. The issue is, I don't recall on the LLCP bill that we did, which was a complete rewrite this year, how we handled that. Well, that was the LLP one, wasn't it?
It was, because the LLC was already done.
Done, but we made some amendments. But we got into this whole member, so either we can look at that bill or look at the statute to see if there is a distinction.
We can just fix this by taking managing out of it, and I'd be happy. Then it wouldn't make any difference.
Right, you're exactly right. So that's the policy call.
So that would be my suggestion, is take managing out of it.
Except as otherwise provided in the company's articles of organization, the members of an LLC manage the affairs and make decisions of the company.
So maybe kind of in a roundabout way, they are all managing mm-hmm. members.
Unless it's otherwise.
Unless it's otherwise provided in the company's articles of organization.
Right, so there's still an opportunity for other folks to be there. And mm-hmm. I just don't think we want to give extra compensation to people who are not disabled, and that's what my concern is.
But I would say, Mr. Chairman, the other side of that coin is that the LLC is the most common form of business organization any longer.
Yeah.
Therefore, we may be prohibiting or limiting that to people that are formed that way, albeit they may be the leading partner or alleged shareholder and have a disability. So,
Mr. Chair,
Sim Croft.
Agree with Representative James. I mean, it does seem to me that the section is pretty tight. Sole proprietorship can only be one, so it's owned by a disability. Partnership if each of the partners, and a corporation that is wholly owned by. So we're being very careful in each to make sure it's everybody. That may be restricted, but that's what we've tried to do in each of the other areas. We probably ought to have it be all of the members of the limited liability company. But it's your impression from reading the statute that you are all our managing members unless the document says you're a non-managing member, a silent member, if you will?
That's the way I read it.
See,
See, that allows for other people to be making investments into this, and I just don't think that people should be making investments into something that has special things unless they're qualifying. In fact, is of course, these other languages from my bill that I had, and I worked this one. It took me 4 years, by the way, to get this done through on that very issue, that they were thinking they were giving someone else an ability by these disabled people getting an ability that somebody else was going to benefit in the long run. And so I think it's very important to make it perfectly clear that it's the members, not the managing members.
Well, this...
In
due deference to Representative James, who is the residential expert in this legislation, it says they're all partners or resident of the state. So why give an advantage to another, just by changing your form of business, you could pick up an advantage, and then adopting new corporate rules that would put you at an advantage over a general type partnership. I don't think that's fair.
Are you talking about number four, or are you talking about number three?
Number four.
Well, we went through that argument, and I have a corporation in my district where the three people are definitely very in wheelchairs, incorporated, and they are all disabled.
But they don't qualify?
Yeah, they do. Now, under this language. Under this language, they do, because they're wholly owned by three people who are disabled. And that's the narrowness of it, so that we don't get someone else who isn't disabled taking advantage of them getting this extra preferential treatment.
Well, that's why I was agreeing with you.
So do you like this? I mean,
I like this.
Or against it?
I like this, but I am not comfortable with the word managing. And I would move to amend by taking out the word managing.
Mr. Chairman, is that in under the disability section, Representative?
Under section two.
And also section
also
one.
Section one.
It is. You got it. It's right there too.
You're messing with your bill, Janet.
Well, now, in that section four there may be a problem if the limited liability is not all members of the state. That could be a possibility, but I don't think we want to be inviting anybody in from out of state to take advantage of this preferential treatment either. We only want to give it to disabled folks that live here, that are our disabled folks.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I expected somebody from corporations to be here today to answer this type of question. I'm sorry they're not available. So I would suggest that if it's the pleasure of the committee to do that, you could go ahead and do that, and I can check with them, and if there is a problem, I can come back to you or Representative James, and if it requires a fix on the floor, we could look at doing something like that.
I'd like to amend my amendment to take managing out of line 6 and line 20.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Person Roper.
I was just wondering if you have the statute there, or maybe our committee counsel could inform me what AS 3205 and point 11 are. Is one of those the LLP? Because it's a partnership under both those. I'm assuming one of those is the LLP.
Partnership and one's the LLP.
Yeah, I think it is. I just want to confirm.
Yeah, let's go on faith.
That from a lawyer?
Uniform Partnership Act.
Because we just rewrote the other one. I don't know what that is.
3205, yes, the Uniform Partnership Act. Partnership Act.
11.
So one is reference to Uniform Partnership Act, and one is reference to Uniform Limited Partnership Act.
Right, that's what I thought, but just to verify that.
All right, so Representative James wants to move an amendment. Line 6 and line 23, page 2. I think we'll find it's problematic, but is your objection?
Never object to Representative James.
All right. Well, we've struck in
many times are there? Is there a House bill? Didn't you have a House bill?
I did for 4 years in a row for five.
No, I missed it.
Further amendments to House Senate Bill 220.
Not on the limited liability. Not on the LLCs or LLPs. I had it.
All right, David, I'm going to look kind of mischief we've
put
ourselves into, but I'm sure. Yeah. I got a sneaky feeling there is something.
Okay, I'll definitely find out, and if there is, Mr. Chairman, I'll get back to you.
Do you have the red phone here? You can call directly.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. No one's on the teleconference line, and no one's here in Juneau. So as it goes, Representative Roper. The motion was what? To move it out of committee?
I was chairman? No, I'd move Senate Bill... Whatever it is.
220.
As amended with individual recommendations, and I presume the attached to this one.
Okay. Without objection. Move. All
right. Yes. I'd like to reconsider.
Oh,
we
need
Bill
259.
Oh.
Here we go.
Senator Taylor bill. That's... sort of a Senator Taylor bill.
Taylor's bill?
I think it's plagiarism in its finest.
Is that the theft of I? Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Another bill.
Have another person's legislation?
Mr. Pound asked me if I would sit in for him because he has to be someplace else. And since it's very, very similar to the governor's bill that you passed about a week and a half ago, around 10 o'clock on Wednesday night, I feel like I can speak to this bill. Of course, we are. I represent the criminal division of the Department of Law, and we are in support of the passage of CS4 Senate Bill 259, Judiciary. And if the committee would like, I could just go through and note the differences between 259 and 338, which you passed. Would that be helpful, or would you like me to do something else?
That would be helpful, I think.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I didn't make copies of 338 for you, so I'll try and speak.
We trust you.
Mr.
Chairman, Ms. Carpenter, if you could editorialize as you went along, that might be helpful for us to see if you've got a problem with the language.
I'd be happy to. Okay, the first change, now I went through it line by line, so I think I got them all. The first change is on page 2, line 14. The House bill provides on line 14 other printed or electronically recorded material. The Senate version says or other material, and this is at the suggestion of Jerry Luckup. He thinks it's redundant to say other printed or electronically recorded material. That material is adequate, and I think that's fine. I don't have a concern with that. Page 4, line 10. And this is the difference that I think may cause concern. I hope it doesn't, but it may. On line 10, the House, this is the culpable, one of the three culpable mental states for criminal impersonation in the first degree. When you folks considered this, you changed with criminal negligence, which appears on line 10, to recklessly damages the financial reputation of the other person. I will point out that the state already has to prove knowing the culpable mental state of knowingly for the first two prongs, we have to prove that a person knowingly possessed an access device or ID document of another person, and without authorization, the other person knowingly uses the device to obtain another identification document or to obtain property. And finally, we would have to prove, under the Senate version, criminal negligence in regard to damaging the final financial reputation of the victim. So that I think that's that is a difference. That
am I looking at the right bill? What we have before us is a House bill, right?
No. We have Senate Bill 259.
I'm looking at this one.
I give up.
Good question.
You know, excuse
because
me, I think
Wednesday.
I know why. Can I explain why? I went to talk to your staff and he printed out that version so I could point out. And they should be in. Yeah. So I would urge you, or I would hope that you would keep the version in the Senate bill, because we already have to prove knowingly on in terms of these other prongs of proving the crime.
Can I ask you about that?
Sure.
Can I ask you about that?
Excuse me.
I have permission from everybody to ask her about that?
Sure.
You may, sir.
Any objection to me asking her about that?
Your objection.
Hearing objection. Okay, so the three prongs, and we're putting the knowingly in the possessed an access or identification to document of another.
Yeah, you know, I didn't explain that very well. That will be what will be read into it by a court, because in default of a culpable mental state, the court will read in knowingly as to acts and recklessly as to circumstances.
Okay, so I have my wife's ATM card.
Yes.
Without her permission. I know I have it. I knowingly possess it. She hasn't given me permission to do so, and I use it to obtain property or services. I use it to obtain actually $300. And the question is, if I accidentally, because I'm a computer klutz, do something in there or transfer something in there, or if I'm using some other access device of her password, and I muck something up in financially that does damage her financial reputation, I move things around or delete a file or whatever. I mean, shouldn't we have a high standard there? If I do that negligently, I've just committed this crime, haven't I?
With criminal negligence. But you also ought to consider the definition of financial reputation when you're considering the possibility that a person could do it,
Where's
carelessly.
That?
And that is on page
419.
It's on page 6, lines 1, right on in the Senate version, page 6, line 1 through 5. What you have, this only applies to damaging a person's financial reputation as it regards to obtaining a loan or creditworthiness on a credit report. So you would have to do something so bad that it would be noted on a credit report.
I've done those things.
Only to yourself.
Right, only to myself so far. The damage, the ability to obtain a loan. Well, I think that was our original concern, that possess an access device. Of course, I know I possess it. Really, if there's any protection, it would be in 2. And 2 is just without authorization of the other person. Does it matter whether they later do it? If I do this without authority, and later they say, yeah, that was fine, I still did it without authority, didn't I?
Well, I think a person can come back and give you authorization to use their credit card.
Retroactive authorization? Right.
Well, in a family situation, I would think. I mean, I hope that we apply these with common sense.
Well, I hope we write them with care, too.
Sure, I agree.
So, I think without authorization, I get in. I use somebody's password. I use friends or spouses, or maybe I am using somebody else's. But then the real question becomes, did you accidentally or intentionally damage the financial reputation? Why isn't 3 just intentional? I mean, why are we setting a recklessness standard? They went in without authority, true, but then what we're punishing them for is damaging the stuff.
That's correct. And this is how the situation arises. And I guess the best example is the woman in Ketchikan who's lost her, or somebody found at a hotel at the Seattle airport, somebody got a credit card number, and in that way, there are websites that you can get a social security number of a person. And then she opened a bank account and she bought a car. She bought goods and services, but we could never. She was in Seattle for one thing, but nothing ever happened to her, even though the police in the Seattle area knew what she was doing. But even if we had jurisdiction over her and had this statute in place so we could bring her back to prosecute her, it would be really hard to prove that she intended to damage this person's financial reputation. What she intended to do was steal money. She bought a car, she got clothing, she got furniture. That's what she intended to do. And by her behavior, she ruined this person's reputation. And, I don't know that we could prove that she even cared much about what she did to this person. She just wanted to get what she needed. So it would be really difficult to prove intent. Recklessness, what you'd have to prove is that she knew of the risk and she consciously disregarded it. Criminal negligence would mean that would require us to prove that her failure to perceive it was so bad that she should be criminally liable for what she did.
Why don't we key then on the salient point of that example, which is the intent to obtain money or other property that you had no lawful right to. A 2 comes close, but it has a lot of other things in it, right?
Well, through the chair, the harm that we're getting at is hurting somebody's financial reputation. We have laws in place that we could prosecute her for fraud if we had her in our state. Fraudulently opening a bank account with somebody else's identification, or buying this car. She bought a car from a used car lot. We can prove theft-related offenses, but the intent of this section is to establish an offense that makes the victim who lost their financial reputation the victim, so that we can try and get jurisdiction over her and bring her back to the state if possible, and she can have various other protections that victims of crimes get, because at this point, people who lose their identity really aren't considered victims of any of a crime. It's the bank or the department store, or the people who give property or credit that are now considered victims.
We don't have jurisdiction because of that?
Well, she did all of her criminal acts in Washington, so that the effect on the Alaska resident is not something that's why we drafted this bill, so we could have something to hang our jurisdictional hat on, and a crime that, will give a person, I assume that having a person convicted of a crime like this would help the victim, in dealing with credit reporters and various people who aren't very cooperative about clearing your credit.
You wouldn't have had jurisdiction before. You guys determined that you didn't in that specific instance.
Through the chair, I don't think we made a formal determination because she never reported it to I don't think she reported it here, except I talked to her personally.
Mm-hmm.
But she did work with the police in Washington, and it was kind of, I thought it was kind of interesting because she was talking to a police officer in Seattle who actually lived on the same block as the woman who stole her identity. And nobody was particularly interested down there in dealing with the problem until this police officer noticed this woman was sending her kids off to school in nicer clothes than he could afford. That made him a little mad, and he followed through with it and tried to do some investigation, but then finally wrote to the Ketchikan victim and said, I've got 4 homicides on my plate right now. This isn't a priority, I'm sorry. So,
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Annie, kind of taking off from Representative Croft's example, Maude is married to Gillespie, and they're getting a divorce, and Maude needs some money. Gillespie is not really a sterling type of guy. He doesn't pay his credit card off. It's pretty much maxed out. Not quite, but Maude goes in and gets something, and she really doesn't care about what happens to Gillespie. She's not really trying to hurt him, but she really didn't care because she's getting ready to leave him. Would that satisfy all three of these?
Well,
And she causes him to overdraw or something, and then
it would depend on whether we could prove that she was using his and not her, not a common access device. If she was using a credit card that was in common,
That would be hers. But I mean, no, she uses his.
And we would have to prove that she had no authorization to charge on his account, which would be something we have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and that she knowingly used it to obtain a false identification card or to obtain property, and that,
well, like you were saying, money,
right? And then with criminal negligence.
What for my layman's mind would that mean? It's still not an intent if it's negligence.
No, and I can tell you what it means. I find it easier to read it because it's hard to memorize.
You don't remember the statutes?
Well, this one, some of them I do remember, but not this one.
It's only about 3 feet wide, isn't that mean, golly?
Okay, if you wouldn't mind, I'll just read what criminal negligence is. A person acts with criminal negligence with respect to a result or a circumstances described by a provisional law defining the offense when the person fails to perceive a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstances exists. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that the failure to perceive it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would observe in those circumstances, in the situation.
Okay, and she's mad, and so she doesn't exercise reasonable. She's mad, and she just wants to get money, and she doesn't care what happens to him.
Well, it would have to be a gross deviation from what is reasonable. And in terms of domestic relations, you know, that would be really difficult to prove.
Okay.
Well, I think that part of the problem I'm having with it is with criminal negligence being a state of mind when you've got a Class B felony. And I just, the two to me, I just am having a hard time accepting that. And I know it's awful to think of hypotheticals, but I can think of a situation, let's say you've got, a 20-year-old son, takes his... And I know you have to, let's say you get by the fact, they know there's no authorization, but they take another person's credit card. They use it, let's say, at the local video store to obtain property, so they've obtained a video by it. And right in that store, there's that big sign that says, you know, these people have bad credit. They don't return their, you know, videos. We've all seen those kind of signs, you know, they don't pay it. So they don't pay it right through the credit card, that damages the financial reputation because they put the name right on the sign, and that all winds up being a Class B felony.
Well, through the chair, that would not be included in the definition of financial reputation because the definition includes ability to get a loan or creditworthiness on a credit report.
Okay.
I'm not saying that it wouldn't
so
be
it's a loan, it's
totally
not,
embarrassing to have your name up there falsely, and but it would not come into this. And we do have to prove knowingly and I understand your concern. We do have to prove knowingly on prongs one and two.
Isn't it obtained property or services on credit? Wouldn't that be a problem under the financial reputation? It's your ability to obtain property or services on credit.
These persons
couldn't that
never
be the
paid
problem?
Their bill and can't rent from
right.
us anymore.
Right. That's why I was concerned about it. It's on line 3 on page 6. I mean, there's some things that you get on credit, you know, that conceivably extends to things like rentals.
Some minor things like rentals.
Right.
Read this article. That's not minor.
No, I understand that. All I'm saying is that for a Class B felony, you don't want to take in some of the more minor things. And what I'm wondering is there a way to restructure so that for the Class B felony, you raise some of the... either raise the intent or some other aspect, and then you drop back down, and maybe you include the criminal negligence one for a lower felony or a misdemeanor.
Well, what this committee did on House Bill 338 is
we changed it to
recklessly. Recklessly damage the financial reputation of
right. Members. But I'm wondering if you'd rather, instead of that, change the intent language and keep it a Class B and drop down and have another section where it's criminal negligence and maybe it's a misdemeanor or maybe it's a C felony.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be something to consider at another date, but. For this, I mean, if you're going to change it, I would recommend changing it to the way you did House Bill 338.
Thank you.
Sure. The other changes are on page 4, lines 17 and 20. the Senate bill includes the language commit a crime. This is second degree criminal impersonation, and it provides that if you take the identity of another, assume a false identity and do an act in the assumed character with intent to commit a crime is added in Senate bill, which was not in House Bill 338. Otherwise, and that's on line 17 and line 20 of Senate Bill 259.
Mr. Chairman?
President Roper.
Does that mean you could be charged with both second and first degree criminal impersonation?
Through the chair, no, I don't think so, because first degree what we would have to prove in addition to anything under second degree is that you harm the financial reputation of another person. So, and
which would be itself a crime, so okay, I understand, right.
On page 4, line 24, this is another suggestion by Jerry Luckup. This, we're talking about falsifying business records, and this is the definition of business record. The House version says recording, comma, electronic data, or an article kept or maintained by an enterprise for the purpose of evidencing or reflecting its condition or activity. He put recording and his position is that a recording is adequate to cover electronic data. And I guess I don't have any strong disagreement with that. And then finally, on SB 259, page 6, lines 6 through 17. Section 14 is not in the House version. And this changes in terms of the crime of making a false report. It provides that a person commits an A misdemeanor if they give false information to a peace officer with intent of implicating another in an offense rather than in a crime. And this was a concern by one of the senators in the Senate Judiciary Committee that a person could have another person's identity and be driving down the highway and be stopped by a police officer and give the driver's license of another person to the police officer, and then therefore the driving record of the other person would reflect whatever traffic violation was committed.
I wouldn't get away with it with yours.
So, and I don't have any objection to that. But. So I think those are all the changes or the differences between the two versions of the bill.
Additional questions for any?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Roper?
I don't know if I was here, but I remember the debate on the reckless issue, but couldn't we use a dollar cap on that to differentiate between first and second degree that might be better than leave the standard alone? That would have overcome some of Representative Cartula's concerns about petty criminal activity.
Through the chair, the harm that we're seeking to address is hurting somebody else's financial reputation, and it's defined fairly narrowly. I mean, it's their creditworthiness on a credit report or their ability to get a loan or obtain credit.
Okay.
We're not talking about a traditional theft in the sense of, well, they stole $25,000. That ought to be a felony. I would prefer if the committee chooses to just raise the culpable mental state to recklessness. On line 10.
No, where's the definition?
It's over here in 6. It is the
problem. Oh, okay. I remember we had this discussion before. Now I remember. Wake up. Right, okay.
Just it could be so mean.
Any questions? Representative Green?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did these minor changes cause the change in the fiscal note?
I believe not, no. The fiscal notes are basically for training of police officers and prosecutors. At this point, and Senate Finance Committee did some serious work on the fiscal notes, and they're pretty small now. There had been some money for, it wouldn't make any changes. That's cool.
I just wondered how this fiscal note compares with the House. I won't pursue that.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the whatever we would want to do by amendment to change this thing is so de minimis that to force this to go back to the Senate, and maybe, of course, Senator Taylor's not going to lose it, but this takes more time.
Well, you don't like to know where the money's coming from.
Oh, is there a fiscal note?
Yeah, there is.
Oh, yeah, $120K.
There's, yeah.
Then we better.
That's pretty heavy.
Where?
$120K.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow, right.
Yeah, there's four different fiscal notes.
Oh. It has to go to the House Finance
Committee. Well, then let's move it.
Okay, without further questions, Manny, then we'll go to the teleconference line. Mr. Lieutenant Hudson. Is he okay?
No.
Oh. Well, I gotta go.
I have to go to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
So take that.
And I can't tell Senator Taylor that we moved to the
beach. Can't tell him that, not if he left.
Have you got something of yours?
Just
yeah.
Happened. Oh,
right now. Well,
it's that time of year.
7 minutes ago, but they're on Senate time, which is another variation of legislative time. I know, I probably have another half an hour.
Did you
back on?
No, I don't like Rick.
Not yet. Okay, let's go to Mr. Blair McHugh.
I know, we've had this
Mr. Chairman, we've got a technical difficulty here.
It's a fiscal late.
Mr. McHugh and I are now back on the line.
Okay. Go ahead.
For the record, my name is Lieutenant David Hudson, representing the Department of Public Safety. I'm testifying here in Anchorage. And certainly, in regards to the bill and the functions of the bill, I listened to Ms. Carpenter's testimony, and she certainly did an excellent job explaining how this would work and how it will benefit the public in the future. I wanted to bring forth that in the initial proposal of this bill, when we worked on it, and of course it was initially proposed by the governor, and then it's been brought forth, the Department of Public Safety has a kind of trooper position associated with this for the purpose of investigating these crimes. I've contacted various law enforcement agencies around the nation, as well as the FBI, to understand some of this technology and how it will affect our investigative skills and techniques. It's very dynamic. It's very changing. Generally speaking, an Alaska State Trooper investigator is a multi-purpose, a multi-task individual, and they don't develop a lot of specific expertise in one small particular.
So much for that technology.
They get cut off again?
They're still there. They just don't know that we can't hear them.
Oh.
Oh, now I've been told.
Here, it's just
oh, the fancy electronic thing.
Is this punishment, Mr. Chairman?
It is.
We've already heard this thing about 50 times.
Maybe not quite that.
Seems like 50. At least twice, I remember.
Well, that's almost 50.
Which is almost as many times as I've been married.
50 times?
No.
German.
Over two.
Your charming bride would not appreciate that.
I know, she's on an airplane. She's supposed to be.
Oh, so you figure she can't hear that. Oh.
Right.
Well, I guess my wife hasn't heard odd.
Stop the tape.
What the heck did I say?